Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network, with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at BrainInjuryRadio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and my show is called Another Fork in the Road. I'm just checking on my sound there. It sounds like I'm mimicking myself here. But anyhow, another fork in the road is for anyone with a brain injury and anyone who is caring for a brain injured person. Anyone with any interest in learning about brain injury is very welcome to listen into this show because there's going to be a lot of interesting details coming out. Brain injury is not discriminating, and it can happen to anyone at any time and anywhere. It's amazing. If you go to my blog on surviving traumatic brain injury, you will see, I don't know, maybe 100 or more interviews with survivors, and you can find out how each survivor has gotten his or her brain injury. And it's some of them are very, very bizarre ways, and some of them are the most simple ways that you would, you trip and you fall. And that's all it takes. If you bump that head of yours and bump it hard enough, you could be talking about a brain injury. So be careful, folks. So the Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are about 5.3 million, probably more than that, in the United States living with some form of brain injury. And that is a really astronomical number. Something needs to be done about brain injury. But most folks don't even know about brain injury. And that's true for me because I never heard of it. I never thought about it. You hear about a broken bone, you hear about cancer, leukemia, you hear about all the different diseases that people get and the afflictions that they have. But I had never heard about brain injury. It hadn't been talked about in 2005 when I was first initiated into this community. Well, it may have been talked about, but not in my presence. And I just really didn't understand what it was at all until it happened in my family. And my husband David had his brain injury in 2005. So I think it's important for people to become aware of brain injury and it's how it might happen to you and what you can do about it if it does. And also take comfort in knowing that you're not alone, and there are lots of other people out there that are willing to help you out and they do understand about it. On another fork in the road, I tried to raise awareness of brain injury and to help the folks to understand what survivors and their caregivers are going through. And I wish that something like this had been available when my husband had his brain injury because it would have been really helpful, I think, to know that I wasn't alone. I only knew one other person at that point. And I had met her in the hospital when her husband had a brain injury 2 weeks after my husband. We're still close friends 13 years later. So at least I felt like we both found each other and we had someone to lean on. But again, it's nice to know that you aren't alone and you can talk to some people about it or hear things about it. So on my show, I interview brain injury survivors and caregivers, and I delve into their journeys to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists and other medical professionals to gain insight into what they offer survivors, and I host a panel discussion each first Sunday of the month to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression or fatigue, anger management, and that's just a few things that, few different topics. There are so many. And tonight's topic is we're going to be talking about massage and meditation and oils and Reiki and exercise and nutrition. And we're going to try to get a lot in tonight to give you a smattering of what's important in after brain injury. So if you, in the beginning of my journey as a host of the Brain Injury Radio Network, I shared my husband David's story and my journey also through the brain injury maze. And if you missed any of my shows, which you probably did because those were like 4 years ago or something, but you can find them in the archives at On Demand at blogtalkradio.com/Brain Injury Radio. This is the point I always think about saying, you should probably have a paper and pencil nearby because I do drop URLs off lately, often, so that you might get some extra information. So that is, again, at On Demand at blogtalkradio.com/Brain Injury Radio, all one word, all lowercase. In the search box at the top of that page, type my last name, Figurski, Figurski, or the name of my show, Another Fork in the Road. You can also find my archived shows on my blog. Again, hope you have that pencil, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Again, all one word, all lowercase, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And on the right sidebar is a category called On the Air Show Menu, and you can just click that On the Air Show Menu and scroll through to see which shows you want. I know that there probably are about 100 shows up there now. So you can look for the titles and see what might interest you. So I hope that you're going to find my show fun and informative tonight, and I hope that you will listen to the shows of the other hosts on Brain Injury Radio, because there are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. Pacific Time. On the weekends, our shows start at 5:30, hence that's why I'm here, 5:30, and it runs to 10 o'clock Pacific Time again. The Brain Injury Radio airs across every state in the United States and in 36 countries. So there's no excuse for you not to listen if you're in any one of the states or in any one of those particular 36 countries. Now I'd like you to sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Tonight, my guest is going to be Fruit Mosey. Her real name is Grace, and I can tell you that story quickly, but her daughter, Jamie, had a brain injury. And that's why, you know, we're going to be talking about brain injury because Fruit knows too much about that at this point. But I guess it was when Jamie was a teen, she was calling her mother Dude all the time, just, hey, Dude, hey, Dude, Brianna. Everything she was saying was, hey, Dude. And her mom says, look, I don't want you to call me Dude anymore. And so Jamie said, okay, then I'm going to call you Fruit. And it stuck. Now, I think this is going on about eight, nine years now, if I'm right. And so, 10 years? Okay.
10.
Well, but it's funny because now everybody calls you Fruit, and although we've never met, I just identify Grace Mosey as Fruit, and I just love her that way. So anyways, Fruit is going to be on my show tonight, and we're going to be talking about a lot of those things I mentioned earlier to you. But we're going to start off in finding a little bit more about her and how she became involved in brain injury. And I gave you a little smattering there of Jamie, but Jamie actually was a professional skier for many years, and she was on the slopes competing when she did, I don't know what kind of a flip it was, but she was, you know, doing it extra best as always, and she over flipped or whatever, and she fell, and she broke her, well, she hit her head very badly. They didn't expect her to live as they lighted her off of the mountain. In fact, I believe in the helicopter she had that, you know, they had kind of pronounced her that she died. Is that true, Fruit? Am I saying the right thing?
Well, they had the first responders had to fill out a fatality report without the date. So
That
because they didn't think she would make it from the ski hill to the hospital. So they didn't actually, they knew she was still alive, but they didn't think she had 20 more minutes.
Okay. All right. Then I stand corrected on that slightly, but I knew there was something going on there. Although a lot of brain injury survivors have said they have died and they've come back, you know, so it's really kind of strange, but it can happen. So that's how Fruit has gotten involved in brain injury. And she is also a teen breakthrough counselor for depressed, anxious, apathetic, and lost teens, as well as a survival coach for the moms. And I'm going to let her tell you more about that in a few minutes. She's also the mother of four daughters, and one of her daughters, as I just said, Jamie, was the professional skier. And her other daughters were very important and very instrumental in helping Jamie to make a really pretty phenomenal recovery from brain injury. She still has issues to deal with, as every brain injury person does, because it doesn't ever go away completely. But I think Jamie is the one that I know, the only one I know that's made that great of a recovery. So, and she's just phenomenal in the things she's done. And she's been back out on the slopes, not competing, but on the slopes. So that's kind of interesting. So at that point, Sue, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to welcome you and say hi. I'm glad you're back again. We did a show in December. I think it was December 3rd, if I remember correctly. And so if you want to hear the beginning of this show, you can go to my blog and go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com and actually put in Sue's name in the search bar. That's probably the easiest way. Or go to that on the air show menu. And scroll down and look for December of 2017. So check that out if you want to hear the beginning of the show. But for right now, we're going to hear this part of it. So anyhow, Fruit, welcome to the show. I'm really happy to have you back again. You're always welcome.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Donna. We have so much to say. We can hardly ever get past go, but we seem to have a lot to say, so it's wonderful. I'm glad to be back. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So I want to ask you to just tell us about that teen breakthrough counselor position that you have. Can you explain that?
Sure.
And I don't know whether does the survival position also coincide with that, or is it separate?
No, they go together. So the being the teen counselor, I have a master's in counseling psychology and education. So I actually from Columbia, which is for those of you listening, that's where her husband works. So that's a little another little tie that we have. and actually the teens that I work with, I actually work with them over the phone. And so they're not just local to where I live in Utah, but I have clients mostly in the northeast where I used to live and along the west coast, which is kind of an interesting thing. What I do is the teens that I work with, they as you said, they're depressed, anxious, apathetic. They're pretty lost. We have to make an agreement that they're not going to physically harm themselves, which could also be connected to eating disorders if they're going to starve themselves or be bulimic or, you know, do things about their eating and create eating disorders. That is also, I tell them that's harming their body. So because I just am not in the position when I don't see them face-to-face to work with them if they're going to harm themselves. But they make the agreements with me, And we talked, we text. They left a text. They left to send me a text at, you know, at school at 2 o'clock when somebody has said something that just sets their trigger off. And when I work with them, I talk about all of their, you know, it's not just talking about their emotional part, also about their, you know, their exercising, their eating, their nutrition, their meditation, all these things that we're going to talk about. I will blend that into the work that I do with them. So it's kind of a crossover that I do. And then the survival coach for the moms, rather than the moms feeling like they need to go to counseling because they have a teenage daughter that's depressed, they need to be coached in how to respond. And it's mostly girls that I work with, although I have worked with a number of boys. I mean, I would say it's 75% girls and 25% boys, so that's why I'll say the moms of the girls. But the moms, they need to understand why their child is behaving some way, what they can do to support their child. They, you know, they're at a point where they're pretty desperate. They're so lost themselves as the parents, and they feel like such failures, and they're so confused, or they might be really angry, or they might be really hurt. I mean, they have a lot of emotion, but it's not as much the counseling that they need. What they need is to know how to support their own child, and most counseling doesn't include that. Most counseling is just with the one person, and they might talk with the parents now and then, but it's usually not as much defined and going to be done. You know, everybody's expecting it to happen the way that I do. Uh-huh. So, and again, it's all over the phone. Very few people want to do FaceTime or Skype or Zoom or, you know, any kind of streaming video, which I thought was very interesting. I thought they'd want to do that, and the teens and the parents really prefer, the parents say they're going to want their kids to do the FaceTime, and the kids say no. And I respect what the teens want, because we get such progress. They go from severely depressed, on the verge of being, some of them are not functioning, but not suicidal. That's the harming themselves part. They're not, some of them are very not functioning, teens, and they end up functioning pretty well after working with me. Some for 6 months, some 2 years, and so it's not like a pill. It's not like a quick fix.
Yeah, right. Interesting that while you're talking, I'm thinking, and how do the teens respond to the fact that their parents are going to be involved or their mom is going to be involved? So you're talking to the mom too, obviously discussing the child, you know. So how do the teens deal with that?
Well, so first of all, I never talk with the parents without saying, this is what I'd like to talk with your parent about, and this is what I'd like to say to them about this topic. So it's not just open dialogue. The parents, though, are welcome to share with me incidents and things that they're confused about, that they don't know what to do, and then I can talk with their teen about that kind of, you know, that situation. So maybe a teen is drinking, and the parent discovers that the teen is drinking, and but they don't know how to approach the teen without having the teen have a serious outburst and breakdown, and so how do they do that? And so the teens, it's something the teens know is going to happen. And what I explain to the teens is I need to support you, and you're in the environment of your parents. And so I need to re-educate your parents in how to communicate and understand you. And they like that. They like that think I'm doing is re-educating their parents. And I tell the parents, you know, I'll be re-educating you, because what worked when they were little isn't working now. It might not have worked when they were little, but it's now so bad that, that whatever it is that is happening, we need to re-educate you, and I need to support you in a different way of interacting with your teens. So the parents know they're coming in to change, and it's not just the kid who's going to change. So that's and I talk much more with the kid than with the parent.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes I'll, at the beginning, I may talk with both of them once a week, and then I taper off the parents to every other week, to once a month, and to once every few months even. And then the teen, I bond once a week working with them for 3 to 6 months, a year. Sometimes we'll do 6 months, taper it down, build it back, you know, to build it back up again and taper it down again.
Uh-huh. Wow,
so
that sounds fascinating.
The teens come into it knowing that I will be talking on their behalf, and I am their their support system. I'm their
their advocate.
I'm the person that their advocate. Exactly. Yes, I'm their advocate for them, not just their advocate for what they want. That's
okay.
A big
good.
So the teen who wants to go out and get drunk every weekend, I'm not going to be an advocate to say to the parents, hey, you know what? You should let your kid go out and drink. I'm going to find out what it is that's making the kid want to be getting drunk on the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just using that as an example. But the kid who wants to sit in the room and never leave the room, I'm going to help the kid find out what it is that's keeping them there and help the parent understand how to help get the kid out of the room without saying, oh, let's go throw a ball up and down the street like worked when they were 10 or 5 or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, that's really interesting. And thank you for sharing that with us. So I want to go into a little bit about some of the things that you did with Jamie when she was in the hospital or when she was in rehab and when she came home from the hospital. Because I know you do a lot of natural kind of healing things, and one of them is Reiki, and I know that you had done that with her. So, and I'm just going to give a little information. The Reiki is a method of ancient healing. It's passed down over the years from Tibet, and it means the universal energy of life, and it's comprised of gentle massage. It relaxes the body, and it relieves stress. Oh, I need this. Allowing it to the body to better heal itself. Reiki affects not only the physical body, but it also the mental, the spiritual, and the emotional aspect of the body. And its purpose is to calm the body and mind and encourage healing. And Reiki is known and used worldwide. I almost had David involved in a Reiki thing. I don't even know if he knows this. He's listening in, so he'll hear it now. But I was talking to you. Oh, I don't know what's talking to you. I had a good friend who also had, you know, I may have said this in my beginning when I was talking about Judy, whose husband came in 2 weeks after me, after David was in the hospital. And Judy had her husband doing Reiki healing. And she had talked to me about it, but I didn't quite understand what was all going on with it. And I didn't. You know, there was just so many things going on between all the therapists that were coming to the house and the therapy sessions outside of the house, and it just got kind of over, I didn't get, you know, I didn't follow through on it. It's basically what it is. So, but I'm just wondering, can you, and I didn't understand it. That was the other thing. I didn't really understand that. So can you talk about what Reiki is? And did you use, I think you did use that on Jamie. So how did it help her to recover?
Well, so the first question was a little bit more understanding of what Reiki is. And it's a form of energy. So it's not electric energy, but it's a form of energy. Well, who knows? Maybe they'll discover it's some form of electric energy, but it's a non-visible form of energy, and you know when you scuff your feet on a carpet and then you touch a piece of metal and you have a little shock, or your hair might get on end from electricity, or you rub the balloon and you pull it out and your hair comes out.
Yeah.
Well, kind of an energy that you get attuned to it by somebody, and then you're in your hands, you can make the energy, you energize the energy of Reiki. And then you don't actually place your hands onto the person. There's an energy between your hands and the person that you're doing the Reiki on, between your hands and the body.
Mm-hmm.
So one of Jamie's sisters was actually a Reiki practitioner. So when she was in the hospital in Vancouver, before we'd even gotten back to Salt Lake, right at the beginning, she did Reiki on Jamie's brain. And when you're very attuned with your Reiki, you can sometimes even sense where the injury is in the person, where the healing needs to happen. So she would move her hands, and Jamie had 8 spots of bleeding in her head. And Janet didn't know, Janet is the sister, didn't know where the spots were other than her right brainstem. So she would just move her hands until she would sense something that made, you know, it was like a hot spot kind of feeling.
Uh-huh.
And then she would leave her hand with that energy going towards that place in Jamie's brain. Now, here's another example that I like to share about what it's like with Reiki. So, you know, if you have a loved one and you're walking hand in hand with your loved one, there's an energy that passes between you and that loved one. Whereas if you are walking hand in hand with a stranger, you're not going to want, that energy is going to feel awkward, going to feel uncomfortable. Or with that loved one, if you're in a big fight with them and you're holding hands, even though you're in a big fight, it's not the same energy as when you're blissfully, happily, hand in hand, walking and, you know, walking along with your loved one. So we know that we have a sensation and feelings that are physical feelings, not just mental feelings, but we physically feel different when we have a loved one or a non-loved one touch us, or the different emotions when we're in a, you know, sometimes we, like there are times as a parent, you know that your child is unhappy because of the way they, when you hug them or something, you know, you can feel it. So mm-hmm. with Reiki, there's something about with that kind of energy, we can't see it. We know it exists when we're talking about love, hate, anger. We know that we can feel that energy. So Reiki is one of those energies, but its purpose is healing. And people learn how to make that energy happen. So does that help you with understanding a little more?
Yeah, it does. I actually once, as you were talking about this, I remember taking some classes, I think it was only 2 classes in my town in Jersey, where we were doing Reiki, and everybody was feeling it, but I didn't feel anything, and it was really annoying because I knew that I wanted to, but I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. You know, nothing was coming across to me, to the point when the instructor took me and had everybody standing around me with their hands, you know, in whatever, you know, and I still didn't feel, and I think she gave up on me. I don't know whether it was just I had a block because I didn't want to believe or what it was, but I'm so fascinated by these things that I don't want to have that block, but anyhow,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so people do actually say that they feel it, you know, that they actually feel mm-hmm. a warmth. Even though your hand might be 3-4 inches away from the other person's body, their arm or wherever they're doing it, and they can feel that, and I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you a little funny story. When Janet was first getting doing her Reiki training, and we lived in New Hampshire at that time, but she lived in California, and so she was doing it in New Hampshire. So the only way I could spend any time, but it was a 2-hour drive from our home, so it wasn't really like around the corner. So the only way during this 5 days that she was going to be, quote, home with me to visit was if I drove with her, for which would mean I'd get the 4 hours in the car with her on the way down and on the way back. So we did our Reiki training, and so they had me come in and do the Reiki training as well, and rather than sit, walk around for the 6 hours while they did the class. So my youngest daughter was about 4 years old, and so we did this thing where we had our hands like up really high. We were kneeling. She was lying down. We were kneeling, and we brought our hands down. And then she said, oh, it's so heavy. Take your hands away. Too heavy. Take your hands away. And I thought she was just, you know, showing off and just saying it to, you know, like, be cool.
Yeah,
and
attention, yeah.
She was like, you know, attention, exactly. And she was four. So we turned her over. We covered her head with a pillow, not, you know, so that she could still breathe, but making sure she absolutely couldn't see us. She couldn't see us. She could hardly hear us. And so one of us would tap her foot, and then the other one would bring her hands down, and then she did the same thing. Oh, it's too heavy. I can't breathe. Stop it now. And so she felt it, and she could tell which was mine and which was Janet's also. So it was a really cool thing. I mean, so then I was like, well, okay, I guess, you know, at least this daughter of mine could actually feel it. And there are times when I have had people doing Reiki on me and I don't feel it at all. And then other times I can feel it, so I don't know if it's the person or my own well-being or what it is, but people don't always feel it. So it's not,
it could be your receptiveness to it. Maybe it was my receptiveness because I was skeptical. But interestingly about with your daughter, children are usually very accepting of almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's not going to have that feeling of, oh, this isn't going to work or whatever. So that's interesting.
Exactly.
She was open-minded to it. And I think I wasn't.
You know,
but
I'm
still trying to be.
Yeah.
And
so
how did you feel that that helped Jamie?
Well, I think with Jamie, with my youngest daughter, it was her mother and her big sister doing it. So, of course, she was going to accept it. It wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
But so with Jamie, what I thought helped with Jamie was I really think it helped things like swelling in her brain. She didn't have any swelling. I think it helped with calming the jitters that normally happen in a brain that's healing. It's really has a lot of energy, and they try to do things to help calm it down. And I think the Reiki really settled that kind of energy in her. And, you know, when Janet would, if she was thrashing, so her right side was paralyzed and her left side was thrashing and trying to find that right side, and she was still in the coma, and it would thrash all over the place. And when Janet would do the Reiki, the left side would settle down.
That's impressive.
We had a physical evidence that it was doing something. There was something happening, and it was clear that it was calming because thrashing would, within minutes, settle from that.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jamie's very fortunate to have all of you and all of the different skills that each of you have to help her through
this.
Yes, that's pretty amazing.
Oh, she was. So she was, you know, she calls it controlled luck, which means that on the one hand, it's just luck that she had us.
But
we made these choices to learn all these different things that we learned, not for her, just, and so the luck was that we knew it. The control was that we made the decisions, you know, or the people who, her first responders, all the different people had done things to bring her or to work with somebody, and she happened to be the first person that they worked with, and so that was the controlled luck that she had.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think back where it might have happened with us. I guess I was just getting the surgeon that we had, too, you know, that saved David's life. And then, of course, the following two surgeries, we moved to a different hospital, and we had one of the best neurosurgeons there, and then ended up with a great neurologist, absolutely fantastic, you know. And I guess it all takes, it is kind of like what you're saying, controlled luck, because it's where David worked. And so that's where he got his care from, and his you know, the people that were helping him, especially in the beginning, when he was the first couple of days when he was in the first hospital, and they were trying to get him over to the Columbia Hospital, Columbia Presbyterian. And had we not had the connections that we had, we wouldn't have been able to make that change so easily, if at all. I don't even know if at all, if I could have affected that had I not had all these people working in the background for me, making all the phone calls to neurologists and things like that. So I guess in one way, I understand what you're talking about and control of luck there. And I guess if everybody stops and thinks a little bit, you know, that everything is probably related in some way, in some controlled luck type form. You know, they talk about coincidences happening, but interesting, you know, why David got a job at Columbia. 30 years later, he has a brain injury that Columbia takes, you know, helps get them through, you know, does the surgery on. You know, that's all kinds of things. Like, if you didn't take that path, that fork in the road, to go down that way, then your results would have been different. You know, it's kind of
exactly
every single day, every single day. So, yeah, that's interesting. I want to move on to essential oils. You do a lot of that, too, don't you?
I love essential oils, yes.
I do, too. I love essential oils. And I want to, I mean, I just got into it. I have, like, 30 bottles here. I'm sitting here with cinnamon wafting through my studio right now, and I usually put it on, pretty, you know, in the diffuser pretty heavy, because I really want to experience the oil that I'm smelling. I don't want it to be just a kind of a whiff here and a whiff there. So I really do kind of douse it in there, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight is a cinnamon night. Actually, the last week has been a cinnamon week. I don't know why, but it's just what I do. A eucalyptus oil and lemongrass and tea tree oil. I mean, there are just so many of them. In fact, I'll tell you how many. There are 100 essential oils. there are more than 100 essential oils that have been around just about forever. But started to use them this year, and then I just couldn't get enough of them that I ended up buying 4 diffusers that are around the house, you know, so I can have, you know, an oil going in different places, wherever I might be working at the time. But recently, essential oils, it seems, have become the buzzword, where it's for folks looking for alternative ways to meet their health needs. Therapeutic-grade essential oils, those that have been deemed pure grade, and are not compromised with any other added chemicals, are touted to be helpful in both physiological and psychological situations. And the key word there was therapeutic grade, because you can go into a lot of different stores and get essential oils, but they aren't all the same, you know. So you have to get essential oils that are really been tested. And because this isn't an FDA product, we have to be a little more careful of that. I know that, I'll tell you a little story that I did when I was learning about essential oils. And you know how you go into the department stores and you've got these little perfume spritzers and you go spritz, spritz on your arm or something like that and enjoy that that scent? Well, I thought I could do the same thing with essential oils. So I go to my little store here and I said, oh, I like this one, and I put a little dab on my wrist here and a little dab, another one on my other side of my hand, and then I put another dab on the back of my wrist and somebody else, some other kind over here. And, yeah, I thought, wow, this is really cool. Well, a couple days later, I had this horrible rash all over my wrist, and I had, you know, my whole hand, actually, my hand and wrist. And I didn't have a clue what it was. Why did that happen? And just on my left one, you know? And then I realized I had put in, well, I realized because I've been doing some reading on essential oils, and you cannot apply essential oils directly to your skin. Many of them you cannot. You have to have a carrier oil for it. A carrier oil is like olive oil or jojoba. I don't know how to say that one. Grapeseed oil, any of these things. You have to put a carrier oil so you dilute the strength of that thing. And, of course, I didn't do that. I just, you know, put them all on and enjoyed the scent for a couple of days. Not a couple of days, but a couple of hours. And that's what happened. So I now know I do not put oils on my body that I'm not certain of. But so that's just one little thing. So you have to be careful of that. And essential oils can be used directly by inhaling them or diffusing the oils, which are diluted with water, into the air using the diffuser, causing you immediate environment to be enveloped in with scent. And that's where I am right now with my cinnamon just, you know, wafting through the air around here in the studio door is closed, so it's all building up. So anyway, I hope that was okay. So smell is one of the five senses. It's the only sense that we have that is rooted directly to the brain, and it connects to the limbic area of the brain where the emotional center is controlled. The limbic center of the brain is also responsible for overseeing memory and stress levels, and it helps to keep the blood pressure and the heart rate on track. Some essential oils can increase the oxygen content of the brain, which can improve the brain's learning and emotional function. In a brain damaged by an injury, extra oxygen can help the healing process. Think of exercise, running, or sports. These activities raise the oxygen content in the brain, which can raise its alertness and its competency. So increasing oxygen to the brain is always good, but it's essential when the brain is injured. Some oils that are noted to be beneficial to increasing oxygen are frankincense, myrrh, and clove. I don't have myrrh, but I have the other two, and I just love those too. You just get, it just gives you a different feel. It takes you to like a different world almost. But it seems that essential oils can provide relief from almost anything, including black widow spider bites, seizures, migraine, headaches, many things. There are books out there that can tell you exactly. I'm not going to name. There are two main companies that sell essential oils. I'm not going to use their name, but I'm using one of the companies, and they give you this great big, huge, 3-inch book, you know, and it's got, you know, that's where I got my information about the spider bites and things like that. If anything happens, you just check out this book and see which oil can help you. Now, of course, if it's life-threatening, you don't just use an oil. You go to the hospital, the emergency room. I'm just saying that as a disclaimer here because I don't want people to think that they can use essential oils for anything, you know, that they want to without, if it's an emergency, head to the hospital. But I use my you know, essential oils and my diffusers because I love the scent. And so I'm not really doing it for medicinal purposes necessarily. I am doing it because they're soothing and they relax me. Sometimes I put on spa music and listen to, well, I don't do it very often because I don't ever give myself time to stop. But if I did, and I have on a couple occasions in my life, I remember. But anyhow, I do put on, you know, put the essential oils on and put on spa music, and oh my God, that's so nice and relaxing. And it can relieve my stress, even if it's just for the moment. And even if it's just for the moment, works, because sometimes you just need that to go away for a while. And as I said, I've only begun to explore essential oils, and I haven't tried many for their specific healing qualities. But I can say that peppermint does something for me, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's in my mind, maybe it really is doing it, but I get some really horrendous neck pains, just cricks my neck that it just they won't go away. It's just all day, every moment of the day. And when I get so sick of it, I can't deal with it anymore, I'll come into my studio and put peppermint on, and within a few minutes, I'm feeling better. I don't get it. I really, truly don't get it, but it works, so I do it. So, again, remember therapeutic oils. If you're going to be using oils, because you can intake some oils, and you can put them on your body if you use a carrier oil, but you must be very, very careful with them because they can actually burn your skin if you don't do that. So read your directions. And again, I am not a medical doctor. I am not in the medical profession at all. I am not prescribing any of these things. I am just offering information. And on that point, Fruit, I'm going to ask you to offer information under the same terms.
All right. Well, you did a great hello to the idea of essential oils. Yeah, they've been around, like you said, for a very, very long time, and have been used in all different parts of the country and, I mean, the world. So when they talk about the wise men bringing gold and frankincense and myrrh,
mm-hmm.
people for a long time had no idea what the gold and the frankincense and myrrh were about. I mean, they figured, well, gold was connected to money, but gold was the only metal that people could use in bodies because it doesn't rust, and so frankincense and myrrh have been known for healing for I don't know how many centuries, but certainly a few centuries, maybe four centuries. So it could be that the wise men were bringing, I don't want this to be religious, but it could be that the gold, frankincense, and myrrh were connected to healing, that mm-hmm. the healing of those have been known for a long time. So anyway, with Jamie, I used some blends that I really liked, and I started off, like, each twice a day I would do a process that would create a full healing effect for her. And so I would start off with using a couple of blends and the company that I use, they create the blend. I didn't create the blends for those. But I had ones that worked to relax her, to energize her. I used peppermint and orange at the end, so lavender was towards the beginning to relax her. And I would just put it on her feet because you have so many nerve endings in your feet. And then I would use some of the oils that would create, like melaleuca, which people know of as tea tree oil. And that is an antibiotic, but it's also an anti-inflammatory. And then we would use, I'm trying to think of the other ones, ginger. So people are now realizing that eating ginger and drinking ginger and, you know, doing things with ginger, that ginger is an anti-inflammatory. So they're anti-inflammatory. Lavender is actually an antiseptic, which is a little different than an antibiotic. But so we would, but knowing that it's going to go in and help. So if for instance, inside of her brain where the spots of bleeding were, as they heal, we didn't want there to be any infection growing. We didn't want there to be any clotting happening. We wanted it to just heal clean.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though you think of an antiseptic as cleaning an outside cut, I felt that if it got into her system and got up into her brain through her blood and nerves, if it got up into her brain, that her brain would actually have the opportunity to heal and clean better. I mean, heal cleanly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when you're putting it on her feet, are you using that carrier oil?
Well, on the bottoms of your feet, a lot of oils you don't need to, because you have thicker calluses on your skin, on your feet. So your hands are going to be much more sensitive, your face, you know, your neck, the rest of your body will be much more sensitive. But the bottoms of the feet, you don't have to be quite as careful that way. But
then
she got a little, but when she woke up and could lie on her tummy when she didn't have the breathing tube anymore, and she could and all the other things attached to her, and she could lie on her tummy, when I would use it on her back, and I put oils on her back with a light massaging touch, that I would use with carrier oil. And I usually use coconut oil.
Okay. Okay. When you're doing that, are you doing it? I'm trying to figure out. No. Okay. When you're doing this, is this like an everyday thing, once a day, twice a day? What are you looking at there? And how do you know what to do?
Well, I had recently before that, it was one of those other controlled luck things. Just recently before that, I had started being a distributor for essential oils, and so I don't know if it's appropriate to say the company that I work with, but and I don't distribute really as selling them. I really just distribute because we use so much in my family. It gives us a nice discount. But I had also gone through therapeutic massage using essential oils, and I had just 2 or 4 months before Jamie's injury, gone through that program. So it's not massage, but it's therapeutic touch with using essential essential oils. So it's not being a whole massage therapist. So as I was, sorry, I had to take a swallow of my tea. My throat was a little dry. So learning that, I learned which ones work for calming, which ones would reduce, like the lavender. You wouldn't think of putting lavender on feet to create internal antiseptic. But you've heard of sepsis, you know, sepsis. So that's when if she had sepsis, that would have been tragic. You know, if everything was going well, and then all of a sudden, so that's an internal, it's kind of an internal infection that just hits the whole body pretty quickly. So I put it on her feet, so it would move all the way up her body. And then as she got, and I also wanted to be, not to be too strong when it got to her head. So that was the other thing that I had learned was, like you put it on a farther entity than where the injury is, if you're going to have it go through the whole body to start with, to see if the body has a reaction to it positively. Rarely, like on your skin, you might have a negative reaction. So it's rare that you would have an internal negative reaction. So I started it with her feet because I didn't want to do anything that was too much for her brain. But as I said, when she had the breathing tube out and some of the other tubes out, and she could lie on her tummy, and she was in the rehab part of in-house rehab. We did it every day, twice to three times a day. We would do the 15 minutes of using the oils.
Okay.
So there were 8 to 10 oils that I would use. So I'm just thinking there was a lavender, melaleuca, ginger, and then there were two blends that are kind of muscle relaxers, and I thought that was super important because since the right side of her body was paralyzed at that time, and coming out of the paralysis, the left side was feeling really uncomfortable trying to do all the balancing work, and the right side, even though it wasn't really moving, those muscles really were inside her still. The muscles wanted to work. They just didn't have anything triggering them to work. So getting her to be able to trigger her. So that was a big part of doing the oils. And I just felt that everything that we did, because she had complete amnesia. She just knew our names. She didn't know her last name, her birth date, where she was born. So not only was she paralyzed on the right side, she had complete amnesia for a while, and it was slowly coming back. So I just felt that repetition, whether it was repetition of physical activities, repetition of talking about her last name and where she was born and all those things, repetition of, who the pictures were that she was looking at, just repetition of the songs that she wanted to hear. So on top of that, repetition of the oils, I felt that if they were going to be effective, then not every hour, that would be too much, but twice to three times a day. And not, maybe she was too stressed, too busy one day to do it. But I noticed the days that if I did it once, the next day she would be stressed. Whereas the times that we did it twice a day, so shortly after she woke up, and then after her therapy, so not just before bed, but after she was done with therapy, and then she still had a few hours before bed, that those next days she was much, her muscles worked better, her thinking was better. I can't remember what I used that helped. Well, we had frankincense. I definitely used frankincense. And frankincense has so many things that it does. But it definitely helps with emotions and cognitive thinking. And, your cognition and your emotions, as you said, the limbic system, they're both in your brain, So when we're talking about recovery from a brain injury, there's all the physical things that need to be recovered. There's all the cognitive things that need to recover. And there's all the emotional things, not just the blood healing properly in the brain, the swelling going down, that kind of, they're very, very, very physical in the brain. Everything, has to be healed through the brain.
That's true. That's amazing. That was so many things. I mean, your brain is your computer. It runs everything that's, your body. So if your brain is not working properly, then you've got some problems to deal with. And that's why brain injury is so devastating when this happens to people. And because that, your brain has got so many different parts of the brain, and each one has so many different things that they have to control, even without your thinking about it. I mean, technically, you're not even aware of all the stuff that your brain is doing just to, to function. I mean, right now, I'm saying all these words. And where are they coming from? How am I saying them? What's going on up there? It's really weird. I actually told David this the other day, because it's kind of a funny little story, but I'm always going in 10 million different directions between my book, between the radio show, between my blog, between living, between just the stuff that we have to do together here. It seems like I explained it to him and said, I've got, just imagine my brain is just like kind of an empty thing up here for a minute. It's not really empty, but just imagine that. But so there's all these little tiny creatures are running around like crazy. And I have only two arms up there in my brain. So, and I can grab at anything I want or whatever comes into my grasp. So all these little things are running around like crazy. They all have to get done. And my little arms just grab out and grab two things, and I have to do that. And then, and it just, it's random. It's totally random what I've taken to get done. And then I'm working on that, and I see something else going on. I grab it to start working on that. And it's just total mass confusion. But it all gets done. But that's what my brain is like. That's how I picture it. Just like a ton of little gremlins running around trying to, do things, and I've got to pick them up to do them. A little strange, but nonetheless.
I think that's a great analogy of how we imagine it to be working, and I think that what the essential oils do is they actually, the little ones that are trying to get the emotions to be normal, well, you bring in the normalizing Lang Lang, Y-L-A-N-G, is a really wonderful essential oil to help with calming anger down and calming emotions down. And people with traumatic brain injuries, there's a lot of emotional unrest that develops from it.
Yeah.
And from the physical jarring of the brain, or the lack of oxygen in the brain, the changes that happen, whatever it is that caused there to be a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my case with my daughter, it was a jarring smash of her head
mm-hmm.
onto the ground. And, you know, and your David, he had the injury reaction, and so, you know, people have aneurysms. There's different things that will cause, it's not always just a bang, but no matter what caused it, what caused the traumatic brain injury, the results can be the same, and the anger
mm-hmm.
and the frustration, and because so many people have to not only deal with changes in their physical, they have to change their whole life. They have to change who they were and who they're going to be. And, you know, both Jamie and David, in their own capacities, had the fortuitous, you know, they were fortuitous to be able to get themselves, you know, David back to being a scientist and a professor, and Jamie,
mm-hmm.
although she chose not to be a competitor, to get back on her skis and be able to ski in places that, you know, probably still she's probably still skiing in places that only 1% of all skiers all over the world can ski in. And so, you know, before she was probably 1/100th of a percent of all the skiers in the world, but now she's still in 1%, you know. So,
wow.
And she might.
That's
might
amazing.
If she had chosen. Yeah, yeah. And so, and your husband with his science went back there.
I know.
The thing with what I think of is the you know, with the everything we're doing. But so our people got back. But there's a lot of people who can't get back to that thing, and they have to find a new thing to be able to do. And it can be emotionally so frustrating, physically so frustrating. So one of the things I think the essential oils are really good at is, you know, helping the synaptic nerves recreate, helping the pathways in the brain so those little gremlins have a place to go. Because
yeah.
I think when what happens is I think those little gremlins are running along a path and they get stuck and they don't have any way to get across. They can't build a bridge because their hands are full. You said they've got two little hands.
Yeah.
And their hands are full.
Yeah.
So they can't build the bridge, and they just know, I got to go there. And so they kind of pile up on each other, and that would be very frustrating. That would make you very angry. That would make you really, you know, confused and have a lot of issues, of those mental issues that TBI have. So not only with the physical parts of healing, I think that the essential oils are very effective with decreasing the inflammation and decreasing, you know, making sure that sepsis doesn't happen, making sure that, or helping to prevent, because again, we're not
mm-hmm.
medical people, and I wouldn't say, oh yeah, use essential oils and you won't have sepsis.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying it can
yeah.
help prevent those kinds of things. But if you think that you have somebody who's having a sepsis reaction, ER immediately, 911 immediately. Don't hold on and wonder if maybe you drop a couple more melaleuca oils or something. No, please just go right away. But and also in the post, like, you know, post the traumatic injury happened. So now in the healing part, you know, to have the oils, they can get into your brain through their chemical process and make that bridge so that little gremlin can go across. And so that emotional frustration has a release, so that the anger has a place to go, so it doesn't just keep building up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that essential oils really help. That's my interpretation, my kind of
uh-huh.
adding on to your gremlin story of how they actually kind of make those changes. And then there's another device, I guess, that we used with Jamie that we haven't actually talked about ever. And it's called a beamer. And because we're talking about emotions and confusion and helping clarify those kinds of confusions and that are connected emotionally and cognitive. And a beamer, I'll give you a slight description and then maybe we'll want to talk about it again another time or something. But
okay. Because I don't know anything about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a little description of it. It creates, so it's kind of an electromagnetic process, and it creates for the capillary. So your blood pumps 95% of, your heart pumps 95% of your blood, and your capillaries, the venous capillaries pump, actually moves the other 75% of the energy. And so if you have clogs in your brain because of healing and things are getting stuck in there. So we noticed with Jamie, maybe after 6 months, she was having, some kinds of emotional and frustrated, lost words and lost objects and, getting confused about things. We noticed all of this. And and so we started using this beamer, and she would lie down on it. And it's an 8-minute process that you lie down. You can have a pad and you lie down on it. And then there was and she would just lie down on it. And it changed, again, I'm not, it's like with when you didn't feel Reiki, you said, well, it's not working. So
right.
You didn't, So I watched Jamie, and she had dramatic changes. She would be stressed and frustrated and angry, and no matter what we did, we put her on the beamer, we'd have her lie down. It's just a pad, looks kind of like a yoga pad, but it's got an attachment to a little computer device that makes it do its thing. And then she would finish, and the most clear-cut example was she could not find her car keys, and she was searching and crying and lost and frustrated and searching and crying and lost, and it was just building on top and just frenzied looking for them. So I said, well, we've looked enough. Now lie down on your beamer. Let's just lie down on the beamer for the 8 minutes and see what happens. And her eyes, the focus of her eyes changed, the tension around her whole body, and it was still the right side, was still having physical reactions from the brain injury. And the whole right side, like from being cramped and twitchy, it just really relaxed. And then she stood up after the 8 minutes, and she walked into the garage, and she went to the box, had recycled glass in it, and picked her keys out of it.
Now, oh, my gosh. You're kidding.
Who would have ever thought, I never thought to look in, and it's not our normal glass recycling box. It had been placed in the garage even. And she said, so this cleared her brain. It settled her brain, cleared her brain. So, and I would put oils on, and then I'd have her lay down on the beamer, and it accentuated the oils, it accentuated the beamer, but not to a point that was inappropriate. So a website for the beamer is Miracle Energy, so miracleenergy.beamer-group.com. And that's a website that can give you some information if you want to look more about it. I'd be happy to tell you more about it some other time, because I don't like to fill up all the time about it.
I'm going to look that up. It's miracleenergy.beamer.
B as in boy, M as in Mary, E-R, and actually there's no dash after the beamer. It's B as in boy, E, M as in Mary,
E-R,
group.
Group, okay.
Group, .com.
Yep. Okay, I wrote it down. So I will I will take a peek into that.
And and look at that. And, you know, all of these other entities, I mean, so you had said you wanted, so we talked a little bit about the Reiki. We've touched on the oils. We've talked, you know, I brought in the Beamer. And because we're close, right? We're close to our time again.
Yes, we are. And we didn't do meditation, nutrition, or exercise, or something else I have here, too. Labyrinth. You spoke to me about a labyrinth.
Oh, the labyrinth.
And I don't know. I forget what that was now.
All right.
Let's see.
Labyrinth.
I think we better hold off on this.
Okay.
Is labyrinth a quickie, or should we hold off on to
it? I think I can do the labyrinth. I'll explain what a labyrinth is, and then we either will have time or not. So a labyrinth is one of those, they're kind of round, and they're outdoors usually, and you walk in and you follow a path that brings you in awkward, and then you get to the center, and then you go back out, and you never cross the same, it's always one path all the way into the center and all the way out. And it zigzags around, and you go forwards and backwards and around and everything, and then you come back out. So do you know what I'm talking about now?
Yeah, it's like a maze. Kind of
like
the old English mazes.
But the distinct thing about that's different between just a maze and a labyrinth is with a maze you have a lot of pathways that you could get locked in.
Okay.
And a labyrinth, it's a circle, you have an entrance, and you go a little bit around, and then you go in a little bit, and you come back towards where you entered, and you might go further around. So it's one pathway that gets you to the center, and then you walk back using a different pathway that brings you out to right next to where you went in. So there's no getting lost in it.
Oh, okay.
There's just it's like a maze, but you never get lost. There's no option. You have one option of the path.
Okay.
Yes. And a maze, you have options, but there's one.
You
and
can't
always,
get lost.
and a labyrinth is circular. It's always a circle.
Okay.
On the outside, it's always a circle. So the thing about a labyrinth is that what's so great about a labyrinth in a brain, even when Jamie was in the wheelchair, we'd wheel in and she'd have her eyes open and you'd be going in a direction and then you turn around, and it really has been proven to have a very strong reaction for the brain to calm it and also stimulate it at the same time. And that's one of the most important things about brain recovery, is that balance of stimulating and, you know, calmly stimulating. So she loved that labyrinth, and we'd go in and you'd go in the one direction and you turn in the other. So lots of visual things happen, and there's so much when you're having visual, you know, vision that affects how the brain is. And the twirling in one direction and twirling the wheelchair all the way back. And then when she started walking, it might take us an hour to have gone, like the first 2 weeks could have taken an hour to walk through it. Whereas one of the girls that, you know, one of my other daughters, maybe 2 minutes to walk through it. So it could be really long and slow for her, but it helps with the balancing, turning, and understanding. And as she recovered more with her brain, not just the physical part, but remembering, I'm going to turn here. I remember this turn. So it kind of created the memory. So there's a whole lot of information about how a labyrinth is emotionally, cognitively, and even some lot of literature that it's spiritually or you know, that other essence, but like spiritually healing for people to go into walk a labyrinth.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know. I didn't realize what that was. But unfortunately, Fruit, this time has gone by very fast again, and we are out of time just about. I have to do my last housekeeping duties and closing down shop here. Mm-hmm. But I wanna thank you very, very much for joining me again. It's always so much fun to chat with you, and I really have, you know, I learn a lot, and I really enjoy the chat with you. I also want to say
thank you
to all. Oh, you're welcome. You're so welcome.
I just want to thank you. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much.
Well, then you can come back as many times as you want, because I love having you on.
Thank you.
So I want to say to all the dads out there, have a very happy Father's Day. Enjoy your day with your family and kids. And to my own husband, I want to say you are the most wonderful person in my life, and a happy Father's Day to you, David. I know you're listening, so meet you in the other room in a little bit. But anyhow, I want to thank Fruit, Mosey, Grace, for joining me tonight. It's always such a pleasure to have her on, and how she is so open to talking about her daughter, how she helped her daughter to heal so well from her brain injury. I want you to know that next time we have a show will be July. Goodness, what is it? Let me check my calendar. I think it's July 1st, yes. We will be having a panel. And again, we are going to finish our anger management show with Lisa Dreyer, Jeanette Davidson-Mayer, and Bob Millsap. Well, that show will be the fourth segment of it. We had a lot to talk about in that show. And so I hope that you'll join me on July 1st at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. If you want to hear more about, I mentioned earlier, my blog, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, is a blog about all anything brain injury, with interviews from survivors and caregivers. Fruit's daughter Jamie has a interview on that blog, and I hope that you will check it out and find out how this young woman made it through this her disastrous accident that she had, and is doing very nicely. I'm very proud of her. There is a category on my brain on my blog about brain injury resources and itty bitty giant steps, and there's a blog category. If you want to write a post about brain injury, please send it to me, and I will try to get it published for you on the thing. I also talk a little bit about my book on my blog under I don't know what it's called. I know what the book's called, but the category, I think it's about Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. That's going to be published on November 1st. I'm really excited about it. We are, I'm in the throes of just getting the last things done, promotion, motivation. I think that the publisher says that the ARCs will be ready, I think, next month. That's the advanced reading copy. So it's going to be a reality pretty soon, folks. And you can pre-order on Amazon.com or at Barnes & Noble right now. But it won't be delivered to you until November 1st when it publishes. So check that out. You can also check out my blog on my website. I have a new website going up, and some of the pages are still a little under construction, and I didn't hide them. So you might, if you go in there today, you'll still see that. But it's DonnaFigurski.com, DonnaFigurski.com. If you put my name in anywhere, you'll find a bunch of stuff that you might be able to find. You'll find it. So on the next date, again, I said on July 1st, we're going to be having the panel of anger management again. And before I sign off, I always like to say, if you liked my show, tell 10 of your friends. If you hated it, well, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. So as the clock is ticking up to 6:50 Pacific time, I have to say goodbye, and I have to say goodbye to my friend Fruit over here too. But I hope that you will stay tuned to the next show with Matt Duffin. It starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and I will be seeing you on July 1st, same time, same station. Next Sunday, though, don't forget to tune in to Jamie Crane Mosey's show. It's called Life Gets Mo Crazy. We didn't even mention that, but Jamie is a host on the Brain Injury Radio. His show airs on the opposite Sundays as mine. So I am the first and third. Jamie is the second and fourth. And I just had an interview with Jamie last week. Goodness. I don't know when it was. It was sometime soon. But I think it was last week. So anyhow, go in and check that out. It was a really good show. It was really a lot of fun. And she talked to me about my book and about brain injury and everything else that's all wrapped up in my world. So at this point, I want to say, Ruth, again, thank you so much for being on the show. And we'll get together again and chat again soon. Good night, everybody.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good night. And happy Father's Day again to all who are celebrating. And